All right, so ready to dive into something that, you know, might seem a little dry at first glance, but trust me, when you get into it, this is juicy stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking IRS Form 8594, the Asset Acquisition Statement. Now, if you've ever even thought about buying or selling a business, this form, it's like the secret handshake of the whole world of acquisitions.
And you know what's so fascinating about this is it's not just about, you know, checking the boxes and making sure you're compliant, although that's obviously important.
Of course.
This is really about strategy.
Okay.
When you get down to it, Form 8594, it's think of it like financial chess. Because how you categorize those assets in a sale, that can have ripple effects, tax implications for both the buyer and the seller for years to come.
So, okay, let me back up for a second here. I get the basic idea of an acquisition, right? One business is, you know, absorbing, scooping up another. But why is this form, this 8594, why is it so crucial for both sides?
Well, you hit on something there, both sides. They both have to file this form, the buyer and the seller. It's a joint effort. And that's where things get really interesting because it's not just about, okay, here's the price, we agree, shake hands, done. They've got to agree on how they're going to value, and more importantly, how they're going to categorize all those different pieces, those assets of the business being sold.
So it's not just about the cost of the whole cake. It's like, what are the ingredients that make up that cost?
That's a great way to put it. It's breaking it down. And, you know, the IRS, they're not messing around here. They give you a recipe, so to speak. Seven distinct asset classes all laid out on this form. And each one of these classes, it gets treated differently when it comes to, you guessed it, taxes. And that's where the strategy comes in.
Okay, so break it down for me. What kind of stuff falls into these categories, and why does it matter so much which bucket it lands in?
All right, so let's say you're buying, I don't know, a manufacturing plant. So class I, that's the easy one, right? Cash, the money the company has on hand, no brainer.
Straightforward.
Then you've got your tangible assets, things you can, you know, touch, machinery, tools, the building itself. That all falls under class B.
Okay, so far so good.
So far, so good. But of course, it can't all be that straightforward. Take class four, for example. This covers inventory. So in our manufacturing plant scenario, we could be talking raw materials, unfinished goods, even spare parts sitting on shelves.
Okay, so I'm seeing some of the categories here, but help me understand this. Why does it matter if, say, a piece of equipment is inventory versus, oh, what is it, Section 197, intangible? Which, by the way, sounds a little intimidating.
It does sound intimidating, doesn't it? But really, it all boils down to how the IRS categorizes things. And it matters because the Section 197 intangible category, those assets get special tax treatment. We're talking things like patents, copyrights, even customer lists. Those assets, they're not physical, you can't touch them, but they're incredibly valuable.
They are.
And they often come with, you know, some nice potential tax advantages for the buyer.
I see. Okay, so then where does goodwill fit into all of this?
Ma, goodwill.
The reputation of a business, the loyal customers they've built up over time.
You're talking about that intangible it factor. And that, my friend, falls under class seven. And this is often where things get really interesting in negotiation. Oh yeah. Because, you know, think about it. Let's say you're buying that bakery down the street, the one with the line out the door every morning. You're not just paying for the ovens and the flour. You're paying a premium for that line for the years they've spent building up a loyal following of pastry enthusiasts.
It's the reputation, the brand they've built.
And that's goodwill. But how do you put an actual dollar amount on that? Well, that's where things can get very, very interesting.
Okay, so it seems like the way you divide up the purchase price into these different categories, it's not just about being organized, it's about some serious, potentially long-term tax implications.
100%. And that is precisely why this form is so crucial, because we're not just talking about ticking boxes on a form. We're talking about the deal itself and having, you know, a really savvy tax professional on your team that can make all the difference, because they can help you navigate these categories strategically and potentially put you in a much better financial position down the road.
Okay, this is really interesting. I'm starting to see why this form that maybe on the surface seems a little bit, you know,
Dry.
dry, a little bit bureaucratic, is actually a really powerful tool in the business world. But before we get, you know, too deep into the weeds of the strategy here, there's this whole other thing on the form, this original versus supplemental statement. What happens if, you know, things change after the initial sale? How's that work? Okay, yeah. So walk me through this whole supplemental thing.
Right.
What could happen after a deal is done that would change these asset classifications?
All right, so imagine this.
Okay.
You're buying that tech startup we talked about. They've got this amazing software, one of a kind. Everyone's buzzing about it.
Right.
You're thinking, Section 197, intangible, here we come, big tax advantages.
Makes sense.
But then, 6 months down the line, you discover something. Turns out, their star programmer, the brains behind the operation.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, is right. They based a big chunk of the good on open source software.
Ouch. So much for one of a kind. So what happens then? Do you have to, like, rewind the whole deal?
Well, you can't exactly rewind, but that's where the supplemental form 8594 comes in.
Yep.
Instead of being this, you know, super valuable Section 197 intangible, that software might get knocked down a few pegs in terms of value.
And that changes the tax situation.
Oh, absolutely. The buyer, they might have to adjust their depreciation deductions. The seller, they might have to revisit how much tax they owe on the sale. It can get messy.
Yikes. Talk about a plot twist.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got these seven asset classes. We know classifying them properly on this form is crucial. But there's another piece here we haven't touched on yet. Fair market value. Now, that sounds, I don't know, kind of self-explanatory. But something tells me it's not as simple as just Googling what a business is worth.
You got that right. It's definitely not that simple. Okay. See, fair market value, it's like this ideal scenario. Imagine a willing buyer and a willing seller, no pressure on either side, and the price they agree on, that's your fair market value.
So it's not just about what the seller wants to get, it's about what the market says their business is actually worth.
Exactly. And this is where things can get a little, shall we say, subjective.
A little, I bet. How do you put a price tag on, like, a company's reputation? We were talking about that bakery earlier with the line out the door.
Yeah.
How do you quantify that?
You're hitting on a really important point. We're talking about goodwill again, right? Customer loyalty, brand recognition, that it factor. It's notoriously difficult to put an exact dollar amount on that.
So if I'm buying that bakery, how do we determine how much of the purchase price is for the ovens, the flour, the recipe for those amazing croissants, and how much is for the years they've spent building a name for themselves?
Well, there are formulas, valuation methods, things like that. You can look at earnings history, market share, customer retention rates. But there's also an element of, you know, negotiation.
This is where it gets strategic, huh?
Exactly. I mean, and this is where having someone on your team who really understands these nuances, a skilled tax advisor.
Right.
They can be worth their weight in gold.
Okay, this is making me a little nervous now. It seems like even a small miscalculation, a disagreement over this fair market value, could have some pretty big consequences.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't want to be on the wrong side of the IRS.
Nobody wants that.
Inconsistencies, inaccuracies on this form. It's a red flag, could trigger an audit, and nobody wants to deal with that.
So we're talking penalties, back taxes, the whole nine yards.
Potentially, yes. And that's why this is not just some formality. It's really important to be prepared.
I'm getting that.
Yep. Understand these asset classes, know how to approach fair market value, and, this is key, get everything documented, reviewed by someone with experience. It can save you a lot of headaches down the line.
Okay, all right, I'm convinced. Form 8594, definitely not something you want to mess around with. But let's, you know, zoom out a little bit here. What does all of this mean for, I don't know, the average listener out there who might be thinking, okay, someday I want to buy a business, or maybe I want to sell my business? What does this all mean for them?
Well, it means knowledge is power. You know, understanding this form, the ins and outs of how these assets are allocated, it puts you in a much better position.
So it's about more than just, like, the sticker price. You're playing the long game here.
Absolutely. It's those tax implications that can really sneak up on you years down the road.
Okay, so give me an example.
Okay, let's say you buy that manufacturing plant we were talking about.
Yep.
If you and the seller, you agree to allocate more of that purchase price to the equipment, right?
Which is Class V.
You got it.
Yeah.
That could mean some pretty significant depreciation deductions for you down the road.
So we're talking real, tangible tax savings.
Real money, year after year.
And on the flip side, for the seller, understanding how to really maximize the value of those intangible assets.
Right.
Like we talked about that customer list, or even just, you know, a company's reputation for great customer service.
Which can be huge.
Huge. Knowing how to leverage that can make a big difference in what they walk away with.
Absolutely. It's a delicate dance, no doubt about it. But that's why this form 8594 is so important, because it's not just a hoop you have to jump through.
Great.
It's an opportunity. It's a chance to be strategic, think long term, and make sure you're getting the most out of that deal.
This has been eye-opening. So if our listeners take away just one thing from this whole deep dive on Form 8594, what would you say it should be?
Don't go it alone. I mean that. Whether you're, you know, a seasoned entrepreneur or just starting out buying or selling a business, it's a big deal.
Huge.
And having a skilled tact professional in your corner as someone who really knows the ropes, that can make all the difference.
Couldn't agree more. When it comes to something as important as this, knowledge, expert guidance, those are your most valuable assets. Maybe even more valuable than that vintage arcade game collection you've been holding onto since the 80s. Who knows? Maybe that could be a Section 197 intangible someday.
Now that you mention it, I've got my eye on a certain Pac-Man machine.
All right, folks, that's a wrap on Form 8594, but here's something to think about. We've talked about how this form impacts buyers and sellers, right? But what about the bigger picture? How does this form, and others like it, how do they influence the overall health of the economy? Do they encourage business acquisitions, or do they make things tougher? Something to ponder. Until next time, happy deal making.